The point you're making is that fishermen and the fishing industry are not understood, and they're not understood by the public, the mainstream media, or the politicians. You make a point that fishermen going out waving their families goodbye, going out to a dangerous job, but they don't get the respect they deserve. Why do you say that?
Well, Tom, one vivid memory in my own head is when I was fishing. And I used to come down, and my 3-year-old young fella used to come down, and he used to dig his nails into the back of my neck, begging me not to go to sea. Because even he, at 3 years of age, knew the dangers of the environment I was going out into. He was at that age. But if my 3-year-old son understands it, I find it incredible that nobody else does. We always seem to look at the negative that fishermen do rather than the positive. And we seem to look at the small numbers of fishermen who are targeted, are identified, that are doing the wrong thing, and not look on the other side of the page, whether, say, in the fishing for marine litter, for instance. 97% of the boats are signed up to collecting litter, but some of the meetings I go to, how do we get the other 3% in? Instead of saying, well, how do you do it? You praise the 97%, so you entice the other 3% to join the good side. It's that simple. So you reward good behavior, and that changes the behavior. But Tom, yeah, look, we have people that are going to sea, as I said, and anybody that can say it's not, just look at the forecast. Look at the waves crashing against the sea, and think of the fishermen that are out there trying to make their living. And unfortunately, the way that we give out the fish, people say, well, why don't they stay ashore? If they stay ashore, that means they don't earn. And if they don't earn, then it becomes financially unviable to go to sea. Because if there's bigger boats and other boats from other countries outside their fishing, they will continue to catch the fish, and the fish are gone. And we don't carry over the fish from one calendar month to the next month per boat. It's carried over as a natural resource for everybody. So if it's not caught last month, we look at the figures and we try and share out that fish for the following month, and it goes up or down depending on what is caught. But any individual that doesn't get out to catch his fish, he doesn't get it the following month. He gets the same share as the boat that was out the previous month. So I don't think people understand what fishermen do to go out there. And I think, in fairness, events that were held by the Marine Institute, where people could come down and board the vessels and have a look and see what actually fishermen are working on, the conditions, the gear, the nets, the technology that they have to use now. If you go on board an ocean seafaring vessel, right, not a fishing vessel, one taking equipment or taking cargo from one country to the other, there's actually less electronic equipment inside those boats than there is in a fishing boat. And a fishing boat, all their crew has to become able to navigate, communicate, maintain, catch fish, become a communicator. And on top of that, they have to follow massive amounts of regulations to be able to apply to do their job. And when they do that, then they come in and they don't even know what they're going to get for the fish. They're on an open market and the fish goes up or down, and it's always the price taker that you see rather than the price demander. And that's a very hard industry to be within. They're also subject to price increases for fuel, wage increases from people ashore that are maintaining, which they need to get as well to stay going, the maintenance costs, even a tin of paint, the price of that has gone up, the constant maintenance because of the environment they're in, because, salt and rust, wear and tear, it's a never-ending outpaying of money for these lads, like. And I don't believe people understand the industry that they're in now.
But Patrick, it's part of the lack of understanding and the fault of the industry itself that it hasn't spoken out consistently. We hear always when there's a cutback in quotas or whatever, but you don't hear a consistent message from the industry in public, do you?
You don't, you see, Tom, and I'm going to give you an example of that. It isn't from the want of trying. I rang up one of our main talk show radio shows on a couple of issues to do with fishing, and I got the researcher, so I won't mention the program because it would be unfair, but it was a prime time program. And the researcher said to me, she said, Patrick, the problem is, you see, we don't get enough calls after you bring an item to our show. So there go, you're not popular enough. So it's a catch-22 situation. If people don't start taking an interest in our industry and commenting on it in the positive side, or to say, you know, we need to give these lads a break, then the interest isn't there, so nobody put us on the airways. So I've gone to plenty of shows, and we see that we're in the audience and we get a chance to speak if the conversation comes around that's specific to our industry. Otherwise, we don't. But, like, you know, it ain't from the want of trying, to be honest with you. And I've been speaking to researchers, and as you said, the time that they show interest is around December time. You'll hear us on the airwaves then. If some tragedy occurs, then they will look for a spokesman for fisheries. If there's a negative story, they'll look for fishermen. We are totally undervalued as an industry in comparison to our European counterparts. And look, it's very simple to see, is this reality? You look at Brexit, you look at the GDP that fisheries give to that country. It's the highest flag they're flying for negotiations. It's holding up everything because they value their fisheries and they want to get back their sovereignty and waters. You see the fight from the European countries who want fisheries and how much they treasure it. You know, and we seem to lose that here. So one story was told to me, Tom, when I was a young lad, and it was from a Spanish man that had moved over here to start a living in Ireland. And he said he couldn't understand, walking the piers and the streets in the local villages here, that, you know, a fisherman wasn't recognised and acknowledged as such. Whereas in Spain, a skipper of one of the big boats that goes to sea, they know him. Like, they don't even have to be involved in the fishery, he said, and they get tipped a hat or a salute. And he said, you know, if an Air Force pilot walked down the street and a captain alongside him, both of them had their skipper's hat and their pilot's hat on, they would get the same respect because they're seen as an integral part of the country to bring food and feed the people inside there with nutritious food. And we don't see that here. Now, I have different views on how that happened. It goes back to our history. It goes back when to the famine times. It is touching on religion. There's a myriad of different reasons for that. But surely we need to start valuing these lads now because they're a dying breed. And that's the truth. We're seeing huge difficulties in getting young people to get involved in the industry. It's, you know, it's a hard life.
Okay, taking that point, and one final one. I always remember fishermen telling me when I started in journalism and was around the ports in West Cork, particularly in the early days, that fishing was the last of the hunters. So therefore, they were individualists. When they went out fishing, they knew everybody knew their own grounds, and that was a particular thing to keep to themselves. But the fishing industry doesn't have the unity of representation that the farming sector has, for example. And thereby, isn't that one of the reasons it doesn't get enough attention? It hasn't a strong, united voice.
Well, Tom, I would have agreed with you a couple of years ago, you know, because of the way that the structure that the stocks are shared out within the country. And look, that's there to be seen. So there's no point in revisiting that. But the penalty points issue, we have full unity across, even the NIF and the RIF agree with us. When we looked for a tie-up scheme for the industry, there was even the aquaculture sector came on board with us. So there was nobody outside the processors, the catching sector, big, small, every fisherman. So there was unity there. We still didn't get what we were looking for. We're now, in fairness with Brexit, and because one of our industry colleagues is leading the charge, Sir Sean O'Donoghue, who drafted the strategy, in all fairness to the men, who works tirelessly. And so, unity, Sean speaks for us first, Sean O'Donoghue, and he has to be commended for that, for the work that he's doing. I tell you, Tom, he's night and day at it. Night and day at it to do it. But he's speaking for all of us. So the unity part of it, absolutely there. We put out joint press releases with the last 6 months and 12 months. So that might have been the case before, but that's not the case now. And look, we've seen the penalty points. You've seen the press releases that went out there. We contacted every PR, every radio station. I even got to speak on Castlebar Radio. We reached out so much about this. But it still didn't grab the politicians' vigour of what is actually happening here. One party and a few independents did stand up and realise what was happening here. And just to make sure that people understand this, we had politicians within the parties that put forward this legislation telling their own party they didn't agree with it. And they begged them to change and adapt it and modify it to make it fair on fishermen. And what did they do? They still voted with them. So, you see, Tom, the frustration that you probably hear in my voice is palpable. It's unbelievable, but we won't stop because we can't stop. We have to keep fighting for our fishermen because it supports our rural communities. I was actually thanking a young lad from BIM for putting together an economic study on the importance of fishing in our area that we actually use, combined with Mr. O'Donoghue, Hugo Boyle and John Ward, united when we meet the ministers of how important fishing is around the, across the communities. 1.22 billion, Tom. That's what it's worth to the Irish economy. 16,000 jobs in certain areas in the country, like Killybegs, Rosseville, and Castletown Bear, where I'm speaking to you from. Over 90% of the socio-economic activity is generated through fishing. We have put the information out there. We need the public to hear us. We need our politicians to hear us. Because when it's gone, it's like those ads, it's gone. There's no bringing it back because we'll lose the skill set that's fine-tuned through generations. I started fishing at the age of eight years of age. And any lad that goes to sea, they're brought up with the industry. But if that link stops, you know, where are we going to get the skill set? Where's the training going to come from? Because you learn on the vessels. It's not just in a schoolroom. You get the probably the foundation for it, but you have to learn it in practicalities outside. It's one thing to be standing on terra firma. When you're outside in an environment where the boat is being thrown left and right, up and down, and there's squalls of water fired at you, and the deck is awash with water, look, you have to live it to understand it.